Shanti. Good morning. So today we have Sister Meredith with us. She's going to interview Brother Nizar and Brother Mohit on the topic, the business of being easy, business of easiness. So just few words about Sister Meredith. So Meredith has been with Baba for last 37 years. She's a professional producer and she hosts a lot of programs and shows on public television in US, and she's been involved in many big projects with Brahma Kumaris for the last 35 years, like Global Cooperation for a Better World and Images and Voices of Hopes and many such things. So today she's with us and she would interview Brother Nizar and Brother Mohit.
Thank you so much. Can you hear? It's okay? Feels a little low. How's that? Better? Okay. Yes. I have to say I'm really thrilled to be able to be here, to get to work on this project, you know, this today's topic, because it's so important. I think to me, for me personally, it's, you know, like there's certain things that are kind of like the basis of Brahma Kumari life. And I feel this is one of them, that if you're doing everything and you're working so hard and, you know, you're making all the effort to be the great Brahmin and make it to the golden age, you know, high up in the numbers and everything, but if you're not easy and life is not easy, then what's the point, right? Everybody else is out there struggling in the world, you know, just trying to get by. And if we behave like that and we live like that, and I know myself, it's like you have those moments, right? You know, everything is, you feel that you're in flow, and I know you both know that topic, right? In flow, and then all of a sudden something happens, and I'll share a story with Mohini Didi later on about me not being in flow and her answer to me many years ago, and it's stuck with me forever. But anyway, so I think the business of easiness is just something that is, for me personally, it's almost like a continual process to be easy. And what happens when you're easy? Life becomes easy. So let me introduce our esteemed guests who are longtime Brahma Kumaris, right? First, I just want to say Nizar Juma. I've had actually the opportunity to see him in action at one of his big events, the Future of Power in New York City, a few years ago. And, you know, he's founded this organization, I mean, as part of the Brahma Kumaris, right, that is where they work with people in corporations, people in government, to really begin to see power in a different way, and we're going to talk about that today. But aside from that, let me just read a couple of things about him. I mean, I could go all day with both of them, but both have extensive bios, but Nizar is a graduate in economics, law, and accountancy from the University of Wales. He has a stellar career in commerce and industry. He's best known for being the manufacturer of Adidas sports equipment for 49 countries in Africa. That's beyond impressive, isn't it? Beyond impressive. So for the past 27 years, Nizar has been actively involved in a voluntary capacity as chairman of some of the boards of the Aga Khan Development Network, including the Aga Khan Health Services, and currently, this is another big one, he is the chairman of 50 companies. I think those are nonprofit companies, right, as I understand it. Any of you involved with nonprofits? Okay, well, I know that myself, I'm involved with a very few, and it feels like I'm working full time, so I can't even imagine when he sleeps. Really. So, you know, and I'm happy to get to interview both of them because, you know, they have so much wisdom and experience in the business world. And that's like, to me, if you can succeed in the business world in that sense and really begin to carve out a new way of thinking and a new way of living, that's what we're all about, the Brahma Kumaris. And Mohit Sibal. Right? Okay. He came into the knowledge 28 years ago in Sydney, Australia, and along with his wife, some of you might know her out there, right? Sono? He's served at various locations in Australia before moving to Abu Dhabi in the Mideast and 14 years ago to serve there. He is a chemical engineer by profession. Mohit has held senior management roles in large international engineering and construction organizations active in the water management field. So, you know, you can see how impressive these speakers are and what they've accomplished in their with their spiritual lives as well. So I think that my first question for both of you, and this is going to be more of a conversation, okay? It doesn't have to be question-answer question. It's not like a panel discussion. My first question is, can you hear me? Yeah, a little more? Okay. Oh, okay, yeah. How's that? Is that, let's see. Okay, I'll kind of go like that. How's that? I think better. Can you maybe fill us in on what life was like before for you, before BK Life, in terms of the easiness of your work, the easiness of your life? Because you are high achievers, as I can see. Again, you've accomplished a lot. And so my feeling always is that people like you have really had to, you know, I don't want to say push, but really, really worked hard and worked long to be able to get to where you've gotten. So give me like kind of four Brahmin life. BB, kind of like that? Yeah. So Nizar, maybe okay. Tell us. Yeah.
All right. That's an easy one. Because life before I came to Baba was a continuous life of stress. Before I came to Baba, I probably had 3-4 companies. I worked all hours that God made. I was a very angry young man. And my ego was bigger than the whole of Asia. Because I thought I was really important. I did. And stress followed me everywhere I went. I even gave stress to people. And I got ulcers at 35. I started in active business life probably when I was 27, something like that. And so I was hell to live with, I'm sure. When I first came to the Brahma Kumaris, when I started to change a little bit, my children said to me, "We don't know what you are doing, but whatever it is, don't stop." Because it was very refreshing for them. So, you know, we don't know before we come to Baba how to handle anything because of our ego and our anger, and not being able to manage our lives, not even knowing who we are. So it was just one continuous life of stress. And I think if I can remember that, I think until I came to Baba, which was 30 years ago, as I said, I was not a very nice person.
Mm.
No, really.
I don't believe that totally. I think you probably had some really good something, because you can't be so successful and everybody dislikes you, right? It can't be that way either. I mean, you must have been giving to people in some ways that you don't realize, but looking back, I mean, I believe what you're saying, but I also feel that, you know, to rise up like that and to work that hard and for that long, don't you think it does require some, it can't just be your brains, you know.
No.
Yeah.
But I think we come to Baba, yeah, then we learn how to manage.
Yes.
You just said that I'm chairman of 50 companies. I'd gone to 84.
Now?
I came down from 84
because
I'm trying to stop. So I think that to manage all that and still wake up for Amritvela and you know, do all those things, I think it's, without Baba it's not possible. So I think that as we come to Baba, even then, I mean, I say I became a Brahmin 30 years ago, but actually I didn't. It took me 3 years before I could say, okay, now I'm a BK. And it took me that long, you know, to organize everything. First of all, that as I was telling you, am I hogging the mic?
No, just keep going until, and then we move
all,
on, that's all.
As I told you, that when I came to a Brahma Kumaris, I liked the knowledge, but I wasn't sure that, you know, so many religious things come out of India and run by so many unscrupulous people, that the first thing I did was that I got Dun and Bradstreet to investigate the Brahma Kumaris. I'm not jesting, it's true. And they gave me a report this thick about the Brahma Kumaris. And I also went to 32 cities where I went to a Brahma Kumaris center, you know, just to see, without notice. I even went to Miami, which is your center.
I remember that you were coming to Miami. Yeah. Right.
So I think it's a whole change of everything, you know, that people believe, my friends, that the Brahma Kumaris had done some magic to me and were bleeding me for money. I think that's what they believe. So I think you start taking steps, and I think that as you do, you know, Baba relates to how you think. So, you know, as a businessman, I remember that Baba was doing deals with me. No, really. You are. Because I would have something, a really difficult. Red meat, I would, this problem would go away. And I gave up red meat on that day, and my problem did go away. And so I had so many experiences like that when Baba was making it easy for me, because we know that to follow dana of purity, I mean, without Baba, it's not possible. That's why all those people out there in the world, you know, find it impossible.
Impossible, really, isn't it?
You know, I was drinking alcohol like it was going out of fashion. And I gave it up in one day, 19th of June, 1992. I even remember that day, which is, you know. So without Baba, it's impossible. So he allows you to take step by step.
Yes. He knows each soul. He really does.
He does.
And so he gives you what you need. He gives you. But I want to hear from Mohit. And what was life like before being a Brahmin?
I was 26 years old when I came to Baba. And I was very intoxicated with my career at that time. You know, I graduated 4 years ago from a premium institute in India, and I wanted to climb the corporate ladder. I'd worked 4 years in India and then migrated to Australia. And meditation was not on my priority at all. You know, I thought meditation was for retired people who had a lot of time and they can sit around and meditate. I didn't have time. I had to get to places. I had to, you know, climb the corporate ladder. But on arriving as new migrants to Sydney, the first people we met were the BKs there, Didi Nirmala's center, Charlie Bhai, and others. And I just started to observe them because, you know, we had free time. We hadn't yet scored jobs, both me and my wife. Mm-hmm. And I started to observe them. And what I noticed that these people, they wake up very early. They had professions like me. They would do a full day's job, come back home, cook their own food. Then in the evening they teach. They often don't get to bed till 10. And again they are up at like 4 in the morning. And I saw that they never like even wrinkled their, you know, forehead. There was absolutely no sign of any stress or anything. And I thought, these guys are hooked on to something and I want that drug, you know. I want what they are on. So this is what, you know, rose my curiosity, and I then started doing the course, and the rest is history. But, you know, the contrast of me working 8 hours and, you know, feeling very irritated and tired in the evenings versus these people was what really, you know, got me.
It's almost like a fairy tale sometimes, I think, you know, like a present fairy tale. Like you just can't believe that it's true.
Yes.
Did you, but you had said you had some doubts, like you went and hired, you know, went to get research done on the Brahma Kumaris. And then from the time that you started, did you find, though, again, like you were saying, it's not necessarily, you look at people who are maybe they've been doing it for a long time. I know myself that then the struggles began. And you mentioned about the wine. I wasn't a big drinker. I didn't drink that much, but I needed to have my one glass of wine every night that I came home after doing a live show every night. That would relax me. And I remember my husband was, when he said, you're not the same person that you were, you know, before you went to these people, kind of these strange people. And he said, I said, like, well, what's different about me? And he says, you used to drink, you know, and that was like fun, like you were fun, and that I was no longer fun. And that for me was, you know, the realization that I, even though I knew I was changing in the way I lived, I didn't want to suddenly be this heavy person and I, you know, that's, I can't do this and I can't do that. And somebody that I worked with who had actually been co-host of my show, I remember saying to him, well, he had been a member of AA. You know what that is, everybody? Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And I said to him, well, how do you do it? How do you go out after, like, because I had to go to a lot of events, you know, like press events and things, and they'd have cocktails and stuff. And I mean, that was part of my work. And I said, well, how do you do it? I asked him, because you don't drink. And he says, I always just get a glass of, you know, sparkling water, and people think that I drink, but I don't drink. You know, but at least if you're holding a drink, then people feel that you haven't, like, rejected them. I remember thinking, that's strange, but if it works, right? And I think part of the easiness, and I want to ask you this, you know, is being able to make people, we're changing and we continue to change. But again, we can't be so out of it that they can't relate to us. And they think we're like priests or something, you know, that, you know, yeah, you know, they're doing their thing, but I can't fit into that world. So I'm just wondering did you make effort to make people feel comfortable with you? Because we do change radically once we get on this path, and we're not like anybody else. You said it's almost impossible.
Yeah. So I was just going to say that I belong to a Punjabi family, and Punjabis are known for eating and drinking, so I was also into that. But when I discovered that, you know, God was teaching in Mount Abu, and if you wanted to go and meet God personally, there were certain, you know, codes of conduct and, you know, this which you had to follow for a certain period of time. Mm-hmm. And so I decided with Sona that, you know, 12 months we'll follow everything to the letter and then go and meet Baba and then decide whether this life is for us or not. So the day we decided to go clean, the night before, I stocked up the fridge. And we had a binge, and then next day, clean. So,
and never again after that? Never again.
Cold turkey.
That's great.
So everything, vegetarianism, gave up alcohol, smoking, physical relationship.
Amazing. I mean, that's amazing because I think, you know, not for everybody can do that. For a lot of people, maybe there's, would you say, more of a process. But I guess as long as we're getting there, you know.
For me, it was a process. I mean, I said that I gave alcohol up in one day. Mm. But the rest of it, you know, I started with red meat and then white meat and then fish and then shellfish. And the last thing I gave up was caviar.
it was little, that was, didn't matter, right?
Yeah, so it took time, as I said, 2-3 years to adjust to that. And my friends, like you were saying, did I make it easy? My friends used to be sarcastically telling me that by not drinking alcohol, mm-hmm. not eating non-vegetarian food, by not going to parties, mm-hmm. going to bed by 10 o'clock, mm-hmm. and waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning every day, how can you have fun mm-hmm. so we can do the same? They were being sarcastic,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
Because what they were saying is that it's a very boring way of life. But I told them that first is the realization that my entire personality came from a bottle. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because without drinking, they told me I was boring, mm-hmm. like it, mm-hmm. they told you mm-hmm. that you are heavy. Yes. So that means without the bottle, I didn't have any personality of my own, which was mm-hmm. quite an alarming find. And I think that was something we had to get used to it, that, you know, I can't imagine me going back to drinking mm-hmm. alcohol. But as I was telling you, we used to go every year to France to choose our wines. Three of us used to buy a container of wine. That container, for the uninitiated, mm-hmm. is 1,200 cases. Which three of us split, 400 cases each, and come December we'd run out. So I'm just telling you the extent of alcohol that we consumed. Mm-hmm. But I told my friends that I obviously am having more happiness mm-hmm. doing what I'm doing, which you described cynically as being a horrible life. So I'm having more fun doing that than what I was doing with your party. Because nobody is holding a gun to my head. Mm. I'm doing this out of my own free will. And I choose to do that.
Yeah.
And I think that's what convinced them that I was serious.
I was lucky. All my friends were back in India. So I didn't have that peer pressure initially.
Yeah.
Till the time when I came back to visit India. But in the early days when I did give up everything, mm-hmm. after about 6 weeks, me and Sona, we had a conversation, and you know, just to check how we were feeling. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying to Sona, I don't care what the experience of meeting Bap Dada is. Mm-hmm. To me, now, after 6 years of 6 weeks of leading a pure life, I can't see myself going back to my old ways. You know, so that was the power of the power Baba was, you know, giving us. In those early days. And then when I did finally go back to India, I made it clear to my friends that I will sit with you, I will, you know, join your parties and all, but I have a curfew, 10:30, I'm going to vanish and go sleep. So, you know, gradually they all started to accept me, and now...
they want to be like you, right?
Yeah. Now I visit them, they let me take over the kitchen, they let me do the cooking, and, you know, they'll have a drink, I will sit and...
Yeah. I think that there's a certain degree of respect that comes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, my friends were taking bets that I would last a week and 1 month and so on. And eventually when they realized that I really was serious, some of them came to me for learning more. And even today... they are still my friends, but, you know, not in the traditional way. Because in the beginning, I asked Daddy Janki that, you know, I have all these friends and ambassadors and ministers. Do I just give them up? And she said, yes.
She did.
And then I think that something happened to her at Amritvela the next morning. And then she called me and said, no, don't give them up. And she said that Baba will find a way for you to still keep a connection with them. So I think that's what's happened to me, that all my old friends are still my friends, but in a different way. They come to me for advice. They send their kids to me to learn lots of things like that. So it's a very different kind of relationship. But I think it's a mature relationship. Mm. Nobody ever says to me anymore, come on, have a drink. They never do that. Mm. And they are very careful. They know that I won't eat their food. Mm. So, you know, there's no barney about that. They just know that. And they accept it. So I think it takes time, but eventually it works out for the better.
Well, also, the world has changed, as we know. But, I mean, years ago, you know, when you all started, you know, it was quite a few years ago, you know, vegetarianism, unless, of course, you lived in India, I don't know about you all, but for my life, it was, you know, people thought that was really weird.
Yeah.
Being a vegetarian now, I mean, it's like everybody's signs everywhere all over Miami. Vegan restaurants are opening up like left and right,
right.
You know. Vegetarianism, meditation. There was meditation like in the 70s or something, but then it like went away. I'm just speaking for America. I don't know. And nobody meditated. It was like everybody was caught up in their careers and their lives and wealth, really, or being, I'm not saying wealth, but success, you know, kind of thing. And then, so people weren't, it has changed, and people are much more, even, I mean, with, it used to be that they would say having a drink is supposed to be very healthy, and lately I've been reading that they're saying, no, if you drink too much, and I'm not even talking about excessive drinking, it's not good for your health, and I think that you die earlier or something like that. So, in a way, I always have found, and I'm wondering how you feel, so whatever we've learned through Baba, you know, how to live, how to think, how everything, is whatever we've learned, it eventually the world is coming around to it, right? It's a little, they take longer, but they start to get it. So would you say, in a way, it's not as hard anymore to be able to, but you're living now in Abu Dhabi, right, so things might be different there. But, I mean, the world is so much more open to this whole way of living, and you never know where you go that you're going to meet someone that's on the same path, right? Or not the same path as us, but, you know, people are into trying to change now.
Yeah, because in the beginning, we were leading a schizophrenic life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So one life was that we kept the Brahma Kumari's life quite secret, because we didn't want to publicize it, because, as you say, in those days it was weird.
Right.
You know, that if a businessman got up and talked about spirituality 25 years ago, they would say he's not a serious business person. You know, he's one of these kind of little funny.
Yeah.
Yogi, you know, once they printed an article in the local press where I have a saying. So they were writing about me, and they said that the vice president of Kenya starts his day with a swim, and Nizar Juma starts his day with meditation. And then they had a big picture of a yogi, half naked, showing me like that. And people were talking to my CEOs and saying, so do you have to first go into this mode before your chairman will agree to do something? You know, they really thought that it was weird. So that's why I said that we sort of didn't go out of our way to publicize what we were doing. Because, they really thought there was something a bit odd about you all those years ago. Now, of course, it's normal. We don't lead a schizophrenic life anymore. Everybody knows. I'm involved with a spiritual organization. I'm a spiritual person. That I teach meditation. I do all of those things.
And you're also a great businessman, I'm sure. Still, I mean, in terms of they still respect you.
You
haven't like left everything. That's okay if you did, but it sounds like you haven't. Am I right?
Now I have conquered it, because now it's also a different way, you know. lots and lots of people in the world meditate. Mm.
Sure.
I mean, they can call it quiet time or contemplation, as they do in the Muslim country, whatever. Mm. But now it's regarded as something elevated, not something inferior. So it's a different, and as you rightly say, vegetarianism now is...
mainstream, yes.
Yeah, it's quite the accepted thing to do. Although they're now going overboard on the other side.
With vegan.
And they've now got plant-based meat that's so... it's too close to comfort. You know,
you wonder, what is it? What is it? Right? I mean, it's funny you say that, because my husband came home with that one night and he was so happy. He said he was in a delicatessen. You know what a delicatessen is? I don't know if that's an American thing. You know, it's not like the greatest. It wouldn't be a place we would go for. Well, they usually have like bagels and cold cuts and things like that. But he said that they had the Impossible Burgers. Anybody know about the Impossible Burgers?
Yeah, everybody knows.
Yeah,
not
okay.
Sure.
Well, not sure. And he was so happy. He goes, there's no onion, no garlic. I said, are you sure? And I never believe anyone until I read read the instructions. And I read them like 5 times to make sure. And after that, I probably don't eat it again usually. But he was so happy to bring it home to me and show me that he had looked into it and done the research. So that's part of, would you say in a way, that's part of the easy life, this, you know, this business of easiness, that what was a struggle for us, maybe we had to go through that to almost prove ourselves to Baba, like, we're still on, you know, we're still on the journey with you, and we plan to be till the end of the end. And but life has gotten easier in terms of our relationships. I remember my mother and she was actually coming to meditation classes at my house, like we would do, you know, more positive thing. We did was meditation, Brahma Kumari's meditation. And one day she just blurted out, well, you know, if you're so into this, because she was very against me going to India, you know, all the time, because my daughter was little. And she said something like, if you're so into this, why didn't you go to religion school and become, you know, a priest or a minister or a rabbi or something? You know, why? And I tried to explain to her that this is, you know, the spiritual life. This is the spiritual path, but you don't have to go to... We have our own universe. This is a university. She didn't get it exactly then. But then
she did.
You see,
they're
eventually.
Also confused. So, did I interrupt you?
No, no.
You see, they also are very confused between religion and spirituality. I think that they don't know the difference. And very often, I have to go out of my way to explain that. Mm. You know, just yesterday, one of my grandsons was interviewing me for some article he has to write for his project, school project. And he was also sort of confused between religion and spirituality. And I had to explain that to him, that these are quite different things. And I think particularly India, you talk about spirituality, you are talking religion, you know, because they don't separate the two. And a lot of people in the world, they, you know, when if they ask me, are you religious? I say, no, I'm not. Mm. I'm spiritual, you know, and they find, then you have to explain.
There is a difference. There is a difference, but I'm wondering if you asked a religious person, like the head of a, you know, of a religious institution, would they? What would they say? Would they say that they're religious, or would they say they're both?
They would say it's the same thing.
Yeah.
But then you have to explain to them that it's not, and I think that, you know. Mostly religions are quite ritualistic. And so they have to follow. When I say it's a dogma, then people get quite upset. Mm. So outside I don't say that. But I think that I go and explain, and to say all the religions have selected one day, Christians Sunday, Muslims Friday, Jews Saturday, Shiva Monday, and so on. And then that day they call a holy day. And on that day they will practice about their religion, they talk about God, they'll go to the mosque or the synagogue or the church, and then they say rest of the week, 6 days, you leave us to do what we want. Don't mix the two. It doesn't compute. So we explained that spirituality is an ism. It's part of your daily life. So you bring it into your daily life so that, you know, you decide to be, not corrupt, or you decide to, introduce things like that. They used to call them values in the old days. Now it's not, it's not, don't
values,
talk about it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that, so it is about bringing soft power into your everyday life. So integrity and, you know, things mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. And not to be angry and not to be egoistic and, you know, not to thump tables and teach everybody that, you know, you are next to God if you are the boss. And so I think all these things, they come slowly as part of a spiritual life. And whether then that's business life or social life or mm-hmm. friends life or family, all of that is part of your daily life. And I think that this takes time.
Not once a year. Once a year, you know, or even once a week. A lot of people go to, you know,
yeah,
church or somewhere.
Yeah, then they say, yes, I'm religious and I think about God.
Or they fast for 1 month of the year.
Yeah. Mm. And then they also are celibate. Mm.
Yeah.
And then you ask them and say, how come this 1 month you are celibate? Mm-hmm. And then they say, because, you know, it's powerful. Mm. And so we say, why not then forever? They say, don't be silly. So, you know that men will go and live in mosques during Ramadan so that they are not tempted. You know, that's what they do. And they understand that to be celibate is powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But then they say, God made us like He did and we are supposed to do that, you know. So, don't talk rubbish.
Yeah, I guess, you know, it's like we're all here, right? And we've come because we know that this is the way. But if you haven't recognized this, there's no way you could follow all of these practices. You know, it doesn't sound like an easy life, and yet to all of us, right? I mean, I would think basically, you know, it's an easy life. We've accepted it. We live it. We can't imagine going back to the way we were. There was a movie once years ago, The Way We Were. It was Barbara Streisand, if anyone remembers her. The Way We Were, you know? And so it's almost like before and now, and there is no going back. And the beauty to me of this, you know, whole study and spiritual university life is that we're not just staying still, are we? We're not just staying put. This is the way. Every day, you know, practicing and learning, and we're growing, we're moving forward. You would think, I mean, I don't know, when I first came, I actually believed that I didn't need to go to the center, because I thought, well, I got it, I took the knowledge, I can do this at home. I had a 4-year-old daughter, I had a full-time, my husband, and then full-time TV job at night, you know, and I, like you were saying, you know, I couldn't imagine where I was going to fit this in at all. So I figured I could go once in a while and visit, and the lady was so nice, and she was so peaceful and everything, who probably many of you know her. I don't know if she's listening, watching, but she'll get mad if I mention her name, Wadi. I was like the first student there. And I figured that, you know, I could just come once in a while and just almost visit her, you know, because she didn't have any students yet. And one day, someone said to me, and we were walking outside, and they asked me how often I came. And I said, oh, you know, I come once a month or something, and I was so proud of myself, you know. And they said, how do you expect to make any progress if that's how often you come? And it shocked me. It, like, went through my entire system. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't know that this was about progress. I thought that this was just about learning it, getting it. Okay, I'm a soul, so I can meditate on a soul. And guess how many meditations we had then. For all, those of you maybe who are newer, not the old ones, would know. How many meditations? You know what we had? Two cassettes. And I think they were both Denise, Sister Denise, on meditation, the soul, and peace. I think we still use them at the center. And that's all we had. And I just thought, I can do this on my own. I'm a strong person. I'm in the media. You know, I know how to, like, absorb things. And when this person said that to me, it was as if, like I said, a shock went through me that there's more to this than I thought. This is really a process. This is really, I guess you could say I was thinking this isn't going to be as easy as I thought, right? Here we're talking, we're supposed to be talking about easiness, but I didn't know that the more that you do this, the easier it gets. Mm-hmm. So I was just wondering if you had any, not doubts, but any feelings about, yes, you made a commitment. I mean, you seem like you made the commitment so fast, and that was it, and you were, right? I mean, everything. It was like all or nothing almost for you and your wife. Right?
I was lucky I had a companion in this path.
Yeah.
And, you know, we did our early progress together.
Yeah.
So that was helpful, but... you know, somewhere early in my journey, the penny dropped for me that this timetable that Baba has set, you know, this model of a BK life that he has, you know, curated for us, mm-hmm. is for my benefit. It's for my healing. It's for my health. And you know, the deeper I embrace it, I am the one to benefit. You know, and I saw whenever there were shortcomings and shortfalls, you know, the same power wasn't there, or you know, the intellect wasn't as sharp, or even your service wasn't that great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it was reassurance along the way that, you know, this is for me.
Yeah.
Which is very...
We're not doing Baba a favor, right? It's not like Baba... He needs us, but...
Yeah.
We're not doing him the favor. He's doing us. He's really doing the biggest favor of all, right? Not giving up on us.
I went in and out a lot, you know, in the first two or three years.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I had massive storms, and because my lifestyle was it was difficult, you know. And so in the first, even when I first came to meet with Baba, which was in... November 1992, one of these Murlis when, you know, after the, I listened to the Murli and then I thought, this is rubbish. You know, that it's not God sitting there. You know, it's hard to, they didn't give me all the details. They just plonked me in the middle of this Madhuban. And I thought, it's not credible that that is God. And at least for me. I mean, so in those days, Baba used to have groups. Mm. You know, and after the Murli, so I was in group number 5. And we were about 40 or 50 of us sitting down there. And then Baba was giving drishti to everybody and asking, have you come here to look around or have you come here to die?
Mm.
And I was thinking, yeah, I've come to look around.
Look around.
because that's why, you know, I was sent there. You know, my teacher was Nikki, and Nikki was really saying, forcing me to come here. And I'd canceled it 5 times and eventually I made it. So anyway... So Baba was asking this question and I kept on saying that, yes, I've come to look around. And I thought, you know, I love the knowledge.
Yeah.
But to believe that God is there, I mean, it was. So then Baba said, you haven't come here because the instrument teacher forced you, have you? And then I thought, yes, it was the... and then he asked again, have you come here to look around or to die? And this time I wasn't sort of saying so strongly. I thought, maybe there's something in this, you know. So then Baba said, did you change your mind in just 1 minute?
Oh. Oh my God.
You haven't made a mistake, have you? In those days, they used to record all this, so it's I can read it now, verbatim. And he was talking to everybody, but I know he was talking to me. So he said, "You have made such a bargain with God Himself, trust your intellect that what you have done is right." Which, you know. So even after that, it took me 2 to 3 years to come to Baba. So, you know, for some of us, it's very hard. For some of us, it's very easy.
No, I also actually had doubts, because I was coming from a scientific background. The knowledge sounded all very good, but that actually God descends in the body of someone and speaks was... It was hard for me. That was hard for me to accept as well. So what I said to Baba was, you know, we will follow all maryadas for 12 months, then I will go and meet you, and I'll check you out for myself, and then decide. So when we got to Madhuban, I got so absorbed with the love and the seniors and the classes and everything, and I forgot about my question to Baba.
Yeah.
But on the day of the meeting with Baba, I got reminded that I'm here to check him out. So I did say to Baba, "Baba, if you are for real, if you are real, you have to give me a signal. You have to give me a signal." Okay, so we sat in Om Shanti Baba, and I was on the floor right in front of the stage. Bhog was offered. Dadi went into trance, and you know, and then the jerk happened. Baba came in, started giving drishti. I got blown away with that drishti. I forgot my question. Then Baba started his murli by saying, "Some children like to test the father. It is good that they do, because faith based on having tested is faith forever." And I didn't tweak, even listening to the murli, I didn't tweak. Then later it occurred to me, Baba was giving me my signal.
You know, so that's amazing. Baba knows each soul, doesn't he? And he
absolutely.
And talking about easiness, he will make it easy for us, won't he? I mean, there'll be struggles, but
I'm not sure. I call him the last minute Baba, you know, because he wants you to do and struggle and do everything, and then at the end, if you haven't made it, then he will sort of make it happen. But he will wait until the last minute.
So you have to make some effort again. I mean, it isn't about, okay, I can just sit here and do nothing.
No. It's not like magic, just like that.
I'm a believer, right? You've seen those TV programs where they heal somebody and the person jumps up and they're, you know, they can't walk and everything. And in 1 second, I mean, maybe it's true. I never exactly thought it was true. I don't know for sure, but it always seemed kind of hokey to me. And I think there was a man in South America that people I know were all going to him. And he was apparently healing a lot of people. And I think somebody famous wrote a book about him. And then it came out that it wasn't really true, you know. So there is a lot of stuff out there like that.
And Baba doesn't do it just like that so easily, because he wants you to learn and to go through a difficult time. And then... Yeah, you know, we did one program in Nairobi in a Kenyatta Conference Center, which houses about 5,000-6,000 people. And Daddy Janki had asked me that I should do one of these public programs. And this was one of my first public things that I did. And, you know, because I'm a business person, you know, I did marketing, I did committees for this and that. I organize everything.
You're an organizer, yeah.
And, you know, I invited the guests, singers and actors and, you know, I organized everything. And because, you know, my ego was still there, you know, it was, and I thought, I can do anything. So, on that day, you know, we are just completing the rehearsals and nothing was working. You know, the microphone wouldn't work. The guy who was with the singer, who was she? You know, our biggest singer from England?
Bliss.
You know, what was her name?
Lucinda.
So Lucinda was there, and her partner, you know, who was the organ player. So he would press the, and nothing would happen. microphones didn't work. You know, we had walkie-talkies which somebody had forgotten to charge, so we couldn't talk to each other. That all those lights up in the gods wouldn't work. I mean, everything was going wrong. So everybody was like quite dejected. And the program was supposed to start at 6 o'clock. And at 5:45, there were about 200 people in this hall of 5,500. Mm. And they all were in white. Mm. You know, so we knew that there were BKs.
Yes.
So anyway, I was like really dejected. And I said, okay, let everybody, we had to go and change. And then when I went into the changing room, I said to Baba, okay, this is a lesson for me. Mm-hmm. Because I have the ego. Because I thought I can do anything. Mm-hmm. Why should all these other people suffer? I'm mm-hmm. telling you. Mm-hmm. So, okay, you've given me my lesson. But, you know, all these other guys, why should they suffer as well? And, you know, Daddy Janki was there. Jayanti Ben, you know, all these guys were there. And we had spent a lot of time and effort in organizing this. Mm. As soon as I came out of the changing room, then I get somebody talking on the walkie-talkie. They said, "By the minister is here." I thought, wow! Mm. And he said, so-and-so, the mayor is here. And look at the queue outside. And so I look out and there's a queue all the way to the main road. You know, there are people waiting to come. And there was a block of cars because car park was getting really full. Even Daddy Janki's car couldn't come in. So eventually we served to a full house, 5,500 people. Mm-hmm. We had to let some of them even go. And it was a program called Something in Wisdom. I've forgotten the name now. It was many years ago. So I later thought to myself, yeah, it was a lesson for me in ego. Mm. But he waited until the last minute.
And helped.
Obviously he helped. But the thing was that he wanted me to learn that it's without me you can do nothing. So, you know, because I thought I can do anything, you know, but so after that I have learned, you know, I've done so many programs for South Africa and for Future of Power and so on. If I get just a tiny bit of ego, tiny, when I think, you know, if I walk like this or talk like this or do like this, I look good. That program will not have 100% success. Mm. I found that time and time again. So I think that God is there. He's there to help us because we know Him. We are in connection with Him. And recently even said that you are my grandchild. Mm-hmm. You know that Brahma is your father, so I am your grandfather, so I am your grandchild. So you are the grandchild of God. But even God doesn't just give it to you on a platter. He's not supposed to, because otherwise you'll not learn. So we are going through this process every time.
And look what you learned. Ego. I mean, that's
because
such a big one.
Yeah, my ego, as I said, was really huge. I thought I was really an important person, you know, I did. And then, as you were saying, you know, when the teachers are trying to give us the knowledge, I gave them time, you know, because Nikki, when she was trying to do the course with me, I did the first lesson, then I thought, it's not very exciting. So, I left. And then, you know, I told my secretary that be very nice to the Brahma Kumaris, but don't let them through. And then, one day she called me at home on a Sunday. And then she said, I thought you business people went through the end of something before you decided yes or no. And I thought, well, that's sensible. So I said to her, okay, one more hour. I'll give you 1 hour as a favor to her. But she was doing the favor to me. But I didn't realize that. And that in that 1 hour, she'd done a lot of yoga and she put the remaining 6 lessons and then she gave it to me. Mm. And every question that I had all my life, to which I had not found an answer, she gave it to me in that 1 hour.
Wow. Wow, that's great.
And I had more questions then. You know, what about this and that and this? She said, your hour is up. That's what she told me. She said, sorry, but your hour is up. Because I was so egoistic by giving her, you know, that 1 hour. So every step of the way, there's something that we... This was right in the beginning, you know, before I even had started on this.
Seems like breaking all of our, you know, all of the things that we, the weaknesses in us, the defects.
Yeah.
He breaks them or separates us from them or does, it gives us a test so that we, like you said, you learned from that test. And it seems like, you know, you said that you were such a controlling kind of a person that everything had to be right and everything had to be perfect. And I've seen that so many times, not just with Brahmins, but with people that are, you know, really determined people to get everything done the way they want it. So isn't that also part of the test that we're all in this together and it can't just be about one person? Baba, I don't think, likes that kind of, you know, that's kind of like the person that thinks that they're the, because of them everything gets done. And we're really learning, we're on this path, we have been, maybe we haven't learned it yet, to be able to work with each other, that we're all important in a group. You know, that each one of us has a part to play, and if we're trying to take over, and or a person feels that some others aren't really that efficient, or maybe they can't do what you can do, there's going to be a lesson. Something's going to happen. Something will go wrong.
Harmony. But harmony and harmonizing is a big part of easiness.
Harmonizing. That's. Thank you for sharing, for bringing that up, because that was something I was thinking about. I forgot about that. So how? So what do we do to harmonize? I like, you know, you learned. But can we make effort to harmonize before we get the test? To make sure everybody's part of something.
I think that without that, you know, because in the business world, you know, if you are the boss, you are the boss. You know what I mean? And everybody does what you want. Here, everybody is a boss. Because all BKs know who they are, you know. So you have to harmonize. Otherwise, it doesn't work. And people like us who are so used to being the boss and so everybody just does what you say. But here, if you don't harmonize, and once you start doing it here, I think you also adopt it there.
Yes.
And things work so much better when you do that. Instead of ruling by the gun, you know, if you start harmonizing, everything works so much better. People want to do things because it's a right way to do it. And so I think, yeah, we learn how to do it. People like me have to learn, you know, how to harmonize in everything that you do. I think it's not just for service, but I think in everything that you do, you know that I used to run my family as I did my business. Really, I did.
Interesting.
And that's why I'm saying my kids were so happy when I started to change.
They must be thrilled to see what you've become over the years, you know. And
I am thrilled to see what
see yourself.
I do. Because you see, when you're angry and when you're egoistic, the only one who suffers is you. When you're yelling, nobody is listening to you. It's just a dog barking. They just stop listening. So I think when you learn that, when you learn that, you know, everything you do in anger or in an egoistic manner is unsuccessful. That's why you harmonize. because it's better way to work, to achieve things, which is Baba's way, you know, but it takes you time. Because we've been through this for 63 births. So it's a long, long time that we have ruled, you know, not in a nice way.
Control. Yeah. You know, trying to control others, feeling that we know best. So doesn't that have to do with, in a sense, lack of respect for others?
Yes.
If we are in a group, I'm sure you've attended meetings, you know, where, and you, as you say, you were probably the one person controlling the meeting because you knew what you were doing. And then some people just, they don't feel part of it, right? Because they don't fit in. They don't know what to say or how to contribute. And then they don't come back usually. They don't want to be involved.
Yeah, it's
because lack they're not of respected.
Lack of yeah. respect for others, but it's also yeah. a desire to control the outcome. I want it my way. Mm-hmm. You know, but harmony is different. You know, there are different ways. And the more I accept that there could be another way that is better than mine, you know. So, with authority, give your idea, give your suggestion, and then
see what happens.
Accept whatever the, you know, the group wants to do.
Mm. Yeah.
Here.
Even in business.
I think that when you harmonize, you also get lots of opinions, at mm-hmm. which otherwise people don't talk.
Mm-hmm. True. Yeah, I personally have been in meetings where I don't feel part of it. When I don't feel part of it, it's because I feel like somebody, or it might not even be one person, is kind of in charge. And not that that's bad that somebody's not coordinating, but if I don't feel like I'm part of it, I can't seem to come up with anything that's, you know, even could help, even a drop. But I love the magic of when a few people get together or have a meeting and there is this flow. There's like a flow. There's an easiness. And it isn't like you have to think, what am I going to say or what can I do? It just happens. Mm-hmm. And it's a magical, it really is magical.
True.
And I think, again, it's maybe the people coming together that really want to work together, collaboration. This is, to me, a very important topic, this part when it comes to easiness, because things really happen in a much bigger way. They're beyond anything that you could ever. It requires time, because you might go to a meeting and expect, okay, now that I got the meeting out of the way, something should happen next, but it doesn't happen. You know, then maybe there's another meeting and another meeting. And then all of a sudden, and I think with BKs, I know I've been involved with something that's been kind of going on like that. And it doesn't always happen right away. You have to be maybe another connection to easiness is you have to be very patient and not be the kind of person that says, I want it, you know, I don't want to come to like 10 meetings. I want to just get it done, get it out, get it off my list, right? I'm sure your lists were very long and yours too, you know, of things that you have to accomplish. And so it's, and again, just being able to, being in the flow, you know, and you know when you're in the flow, don't you? In flow. There's a whole psychological, it has to do with psychology, right? In flow, when everybody's in flow and you're in flow, and I was just wondering.
Yeah, yeah. You know that we sometimes can also let the flow be easier mm-hmm. through here
mm-hmm.
Rather than here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this is something we as Brahmins have mm-hmm. which outsiders don't. And I think that this is such an important part of our lives
mm-hmm.
That we are doing more through vibration, because we also feel the vibrations much more.
Mm-hmm.
And I often, when there are very heated meetings, I mm-hmm. give a comfort break,
mm-hmm.
tell everybody, okay, 10 minutes comfort break. I then sit and spread vibrations of peace and love. In that 5 minutes, when they come back, the atmosphere is quite changed. And I think that this is something we can do.
Beautiful.
Which I think is because we are the only ones that have a connection to God. We know God. Mm-hmm. So we can bring the vibrations through Him, which I think that we need to do more and more of that. Rather than through words.
That's powerful. Thank you, for sharing that, because, again, when that happens, change happens, doesn't it? I mean, magic happens. Just the fact that you do that and people feel it.
Yeah, and that's why, what we do in the Lokic world is therefore much more successful than even what we used to achieve before being Brahmins. Because we were just ordinary people then.
Mm.
And now we have much more success in whatever we do, as long as the end result is something which is positive and not dirty, you know what I mean? Then you can achieve much more success.
I want to ask you a question, both of you. I don't know if in your countries it's as, intense as it is in America, but politics in America has gotten so fractured, as I'm sure you all know, and it's created a lot of strife, in terms of conflicts with people, friends breaking up, best friends don't talk to each other because they're on one side or another. You can see it's become very violent as well in America due to politics. And even I know from in the past, I don't know recently, but with the Brahmakumaris, there were people on different sides, and it created some friction. I haven't heard about it lately, so maybe we've cleared that because of COVID. But I just wanted to get your thoughts, because you've both been with big businesses, and how do you handle with ease people in your life that are just on opposite sides? And you were talking about whether you drop your friends, all your friends, like you asked Daddy Janky. Some people have. I personally don't believe that I should lose my friends and that have been my friends for years because they're voting otherwise, So I just wanted to get your feelings about that, because, breaking up relationships is, I don't consider that to be a very yogi thing,
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I personally don't have strong political views, but I'm related to people, and I'm friends with people who have strong, leanings. And so my approach is live and let live. It's like they have a right to their opinion. Mm-hmm. They have a right to follow whoever they wish to. Mm-hmm. And whether I agree with it or not, we can peacefully coexist. Mm-hmm. We don't have to burn bridges or, turn into enemies. I know my college mates, one of them was an avid Trump supporter, and he fell out of favor from the rest of the gang. Mm-hmm. But I'm the only one who's kept up connection with him, mm-hmm. Because to me it doesn't matter that he's a Trump supporter.
Yeah, right.
It's a matter of the space you're coming from. Mm-hmm. And the energy you can bring to that exchange, that relationship.
Nowadays I don't go into conflict since I've been a PK, and let go.
Mm-hmm.
I've had conflicts.
Yeah.
And I did a list mm-hmm. of all the people with whom I've had conflicts. And I had 16 of them. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying, to get... I'm now down to 5. Mm. These are people that I've had conflicts with, and I still haven't sorted it.
Mm-hmm.
It was like an uncle of mine when I was little used to beat me up. Mm-hmm. And I found it very hard mm-hmm. to let go, to forgive.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought I was very young, it was between 8 and 10. So, but I've let him go, because he was suffering a lot at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought that it's affecting me more than it's affecting them mm-hmm. if I don't let go.
Yeah.
And so step by step by step, I go through, I meet those people, I try to, you know, come together and so that, you know, the burden is less. Mm-hmm. But I had to sit down and think about all those people and mm-hmm. then write them off step by step. So I think that that is something we all have to do and not get into new ones.
Mm. Right. No more new karma, new bad yeah. karma, right?
Yeah, because yeah. Baba also says to us, settle all your conflicts. And so I that's when I did that list and say, okay, I don't want to enter into new ones, but let me also settle the old one. So I hope that in the next year or so, I'll be able to get rid of these remaining five.
Well, I like what you said earlier about sending out those positive vibes.
Yes.
In your office or in your business. So maybe if you could use that.
I'm doing
and
that.
And just keep
yeah.
doing it, something will change, you know.
Yes, yes, yes.
And maybe you can't, you know, you don't, I mean, my own feeling, you know, is you don't want to struggle with, if it's not working, with trying to make it work either. You want to just make the effort like you have, or you're in your mind and you're meditating on that, and then let it go and see what yeah. happens. Because some many cases, it's often not our fault, I think. There are situations where we really, I don't want to say we didn't do something wrong, but, you know, some people are troubled and they want to be angry. And I don't know if we keep dwelling on that with people, if that's again, not so good for us either. So your thoughts?
You know, the time that I've spent in the yeah. workplace uh-huh. has also matured and improved the quality, I mean.
Right.
I don't like to be competitive or, you know, come into conflict mm-hmm. or, you know, do any of those things. I try more and more to stay connected with Baba and have the thought that this person doesn't have access to Baba
yeah.
or whoever I'm interacting with at my workplace, because they are, you know, it's a different world to the BK world.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it that they can feel from me, or what, you know, what how I can touch them? So what is my contribution for being there to that situation or that interaction? And every interaction that I have should be meaningful, should be quality. You know, that's what I try and aspire to. And, you know, trying to put into practice Baba's direction of being an instrument, staying connected with Baba, and then so others can feel mm-hmm. that energy or something different. You know, they feel that there is something different in that interaction or that. So
yeah.
So that's I feel more and more that's my role mm. for still being in the workplace. Okay, it's a means to an end. It's a, you know, job and a salary and all that. But there's a deeper side to it. And
well, they're in our lives, whether they're in business or family, right, or wherever they are. You know, they're in our lives for a reason. So I think everybody's there to show us something. So we can't just ignore them and think. So that's, yeah, that's good. And I think we're out of time. We are. Just, yeah, but, yeah, we are. It's, for me, it's moved very quickly, so quickly. And it's been so rich to me, you know, so much to think about with both of you. I don't know if we have any time for any questions. Does anybody want, yes, okay.
Wow, that was a strong hand.
That was good, yeah.
Yeah. Emphatic.
Yeah.
I gave an example of one conflict, you know, which was with my uncle, but not the rest of them are sort of, you know, in everyday life, particularly prior to being a BK, mm-hmm. when, you know, you are not, I was not an easy person, And so we created conflicts, and then you sort of never finished it. So what you do is that, first of all, as you were saying, you give them, you know, after Amritvela, I give vibrations to what is my responsibilities, which are my family, you know, my affairs of people that I believe are my responsibility. At that time, I also give vibrations to these people with whom I have a conflict, so that situation will arise where I will come into contact with them and be able to settle it. That's how I settle the 11 out of 16. Mm-hmm. And the five that are remaining is just that a situation hasn't arisen yet when I'm coming close to them. But if your intention is to settle it, then you are no longer looking for a debate. Mm-hmm. You know, you were right or I was right, it's not important anymore. So I want to just find the opportunity to, and with the right kind of atmosphere, which it will be created, because I'm giving them vibrations every morning. Mm-hmm. I think that's how I was able to settle 11, and I'm sure I'll settle the remaining five. Because conflicts do happen. Sometimes you can finish it the next day, and sometimes it just continues. Most of mine are prior to me being a PK. Mm-hmm. So it's a long story. You know, particularly in my days of non-forgiving, big ego kind of situations. So I think this is the way to settle it. Start giving their vibrations. Situation then arises when they come in front of you, and then you just settle it in a way. All the 11 have been settled in a nice way. So it's not been I begged or they begged. It just was mutually settled. And I think then the situation happens like that, if you give it. After Amritvela, I hope that all of you do this. Everything that's your responsibility, you have to give them vibrations of peace and love. Just takes you 5 minutes, because they don't know God. You know God. So you have a connection with God. So you can give them real vibrations of peace and love. And I think that's what we... It's also protection for the people around you, including your family. So I think that's something I learned a long time ago, and I do that every day. You know, we don't stop. I think it's very useful. Did I answer it, or did I help answer?
Yeah, that's very powerful. I mean, I'm sure we all have something, maybe something lingering. Maybe not. If we don't, that's great, you know. That's really good. Does anyone else have a question? Got someone in the back there? Come on up.
That's why I say work with this rather than this. Mm-hmm. That's what you have to do. You try it. Do it for 1 week to that person you are referring. Just do that. After Amritvela, give them these vibrations of peace and love. Next time you see them, you see that their attitude has changed. Mm. You are much more powerful than you know. I'm sure you do know, but I'm just saying that. Because I really found this amazingly powerful. Particularly, you know, to people like you are now describing, you see that the difference is amazing. Even with people that you have had conflicts and you even don't speak to them, if you do that, you know, because the wall has been created, and with this, when next time you see them, the wall will come down so that the atmosphere is being created, which is much more amenable than it was before.
Mm.
Just try it. It works wonders, really.
I think we need to really absorb this, what you've said. I think it's just an amazing thing, you know.
And the signal is clearly there. If they're not listening to Gyan, then don't keep speaking.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, because maybe it's not in their karma.
Yeah.
You know, if they're not going to be Brahmins, they haven't been in Laskapa, whatever you do, it will not happen.
The best service will be your dharana.
Your?
Dharana.
Your
example.
Your example.
Will be the best service for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact that you are concerned about it, I mean, means already that you are talking from the heart. So, do what I'm telling you. Just try it. Otherwise, you say that Nizar talked a lot of rubbish.
Thank you, everyone, for being here.
Yeah, she has a question.
Oh, okay. We got time. We have time.
Yes. You want to take that?
I'll use the analogy of immunity. You know, a medical worker is able to stay free from disease while they're working in a hospital only because they're carrying a high level of immunity. You know, so for us to survive, and not just survive but thrive and enjoy being in the lock aches and everything, first we need to internally build our own immunity to that level where I am able to positively influence rather than be influenced. You know, so for that I need to make time for my regular practice, my disciplines, regular study. So when I start to feel internally strong, that's when I am able to then freely interact and socialize and do all those things you are saying. But when my immunity is weak, I will catch the flu. You know, that's how medical staff stay strong and keep serving, is they internally keep themselves strong. So whatever they do, you know, their exercise, their diet, we need to also do that on a spiritual level, have our own.
And you see, the fact that you got up and asked this question means that you are caring already. You are concerned about it. You know, people like me, you know, I travel 6 months in a year. I mean, not in COVID, but I mean, generally. So, you know, and also nobody in my family is a BK. I only had a sister of mine who's gone up now. So, we have to ad lib and not be so conscious about this. You know, that we were trying to demystify the Brahma Kumaris, particularly when we started the Future of Power. You know, because people then were so dogmatic about it. Don't touch that food! You know, we don't eat your food, you know, and things like that. We have to stop this. We have to try and normalize. Mm. You know, it's no big deal that we are vegetarians. It's no big deal that we don't eat onion garlic. We have reasons for all of this, you know, because, you know, the world is going that way now. And they are saying, you know. Mm. So we don't have to be ashamed about that. But on the other hand, you know, to convert somebody, we don't do it with a gun. I think that, you know, we have to accept what they are doing. And with my family, I still spend time with my family, obviously. Mm-hmm. But then I don't go through and say, don't do that and don't give me that. They all know that they respect me and respect my ways. So I think that they don't impose their ways on me, and I don't impose it. I say it's better for you, it's easier for you. And out of my family, which is like spread all over the world, my youngest son has become a vegetarian, you know, out of choice. He's not a BK, but I mean...
Yeah, that's great.
So I think that don't make us to be so violently different to everybody else. I think that we are not. We have to slowly slip into that world and still follow what we want to do. And then by example, hopefully that they will see that I think what we are doing is not crazy. You know, I mean, if you analyze everything that we do as BKs, I mean, it's not that crazy.
No, it's not.
You know what I mean?
We're not the first, you know, to live like this.
I think that, you know, in the beginning, I used to think that it was crazy, but as you go more and more into it, let's demystify the Brahma Kumaris. We are quite normal. We are not something that they need to be afraid of us, you know. Like they used to be, really afraid of us.
Well, because there's a reason people were so adamant about, you know, there's a better way to handle people. And I think it has to do with maybe an important part of all of what we're talking about is have an easy nature. You know?
And I think we have to do what we have to do.
Right.
Because we know if we miss Murli that it's going to be a very bad day. you know what I mean? We cannot physically eat food that's not ours. You know, we physically can't do it. So that's why we eat what we eat, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that I don't think it's not normal anymore. I don't think so. Yeah. Sorry, you should be in the
video. No, it's okay.
You know that for 63 births, you have not found him. You know, I mean, it's a lot of looking. And lots of people... have given you lots of stories about how they are very close to God and sons of gods and all kinds of stories, which I don't need to repeat. And we followed them and found out that that's not true. So when the truth comes in front of you and bites you, you say, that's not the truth. Because of that, I think that's why, you know, when I was told that lady, Dari Gulzar, who sits there, is... God is in him, and he comes 10 times a year, and you think, come on. No, I mean, that's what happens, you know, because you have been presented with so many, you know, right from the first sun god, Ra, you know, we've been looking. You know, in Egypt, you know, that's where you and I were still there. And we were looking for God, and then we thought, point of light, sun, okay, that's God. So, and we called him Ra. I mean, and ever since then, you know, when Jesus Christ came, somebody said, there's somebody called Jesus Christ and he's saying nice things about God. We say, fine, let's go. And then Muhammad came and whoever came, we just followed.
And lately all the Babas, no? Sai Baba, this Baba, that Baba. Everyone's claiming that they are channeling God God is coming into them. It's like, you know, especially when you're from a scientific or a business background, you are not so prone to belief, you know.
Right.
So It's what's being told to you seems very out of the world.
And if it was not that you have accepted God, every kalpa, that you would probably also say no. You know, I mean, it's rubbish. Because it's not a part of your sanskar. Then you just say no.
Till you have your own experience, till you are, you know, have the time to to check it out. Because what is Baba teaching us? Can a human being teach us what he's teaching us? You know, so indirectly I came to that conclusion that this can be only God teaching. And the quality of the teachings was so good.
Right.
That it couldn't be coming from a human being.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. It's true.
So, you know, you...
And also we need to now do the arithmetic. You know, because 108, 16,000, 900,000, all that is done. Mm-hmm. There are only a few who will come at the end. What we are now looking for is 300 million, 330 million, right?
Yeah.
Who are not going to follow Dharana, believe me. They are not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So they will still listen to the Murli, be respectful to you. But, you know, they are not going to be Brahmins in the traditional sense. They are not. You know, my daughter-in-law, she accepted everything about Gyan. Everything. Mm-hmm. I said, don't you have any questions? No. I find everything to be logical. You know? She told me that. Mm. Everything is logical. Everything makes sense. I told her everything.
Huh.
And still, I know that she's following Dharana. She's not going to.
Mm.
My son, who has also done the course, you know, says, I know this is the right thing, but I'm still too young. So one day I'll come. Now, you see, these are all part of 330 million.
Mm.
You know, my youngest son, you know, when I gave him the whole knowledge, then I could feel the vibrations in my tummy that they were really negative. So at the end, I said, when I finished the course, he said, Dad, do you want me to please you or to tell you the truth?
Mm-hmm.
I said, tell me the truth. He said, it's just rubbish. All of it is rubbish. So I said, at least accept that you are separate as a soul from the body. He said, no, it's rubbish.
Mm.
So, he's a new soul. Mm. What can we do?
Right.
He's not even part of 330 million. He's not. You see? But, he's 40-something, and I used to say to my kids that you need to be in a state of being able to retire when you're 40.
Mm-hmm.
He's retired.
Mm-hmm.
Because new soul... He's made so much money. He said, why should I work? You told me to retire. I said, I didn't tell you to retire. I told you to be in a position to retire. He's retired. New soul, you see. It's, for him, it's Satyug right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, we recognize now who is who. You know, so I know that my son and my daughter-in-law, my oldest son, are part of 330 million. My youngest son is not part of anything. He's just a new soul. So, what do you do? I mean, you just live with it. You accept it. Because now, only 330 million, remember. So, not many are going to just light up and say, yeah, I'm for Baba. You know, there are going to be very few of those.
Just a few left, huh? To really, yeah that's... I think that we better say goodbye. Oh, you want one more? Oh, okay, she's back. Come on. Okay, who? Yeah. Sure.
I really can't hear.
We can't hear.
How you conduct? Oh, I see. Okay.
So,
How do we do?
And improve the quality.
Improve the quality. Okay, okay. You know, Amritvela is something that I think you improve it every day. You know, if you are 2 years old, Baba is doing magic with you. You know, I remember those first 2, 3, 4 years were fantastic. Because I just sat there and I connected. I mean, everything was so beautiful. So for you, things should be just brilliant, whatever you do. Because Baba is holding your hand right now. I mean, all of us remember that. You know, there's even a song that say, don't forget the days of your childhood. And but I think that don't put this thing in your head that depending on what you did yesterday, your Amritvela is going to be better or worse for that. I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think that once you sit in Amritvela, you might have a couple of minutes of, you know, not so strong a concentration. But after that, you just get into it. If you have too many thoughts in your head, and that's what sometimes distracts you. You know, we all do that. If you had a really hard day previously, lots of things in your head, and then they keep coming back to you. What I do is I take a piece of paper and I write it down. All the things which are coming into my head. Because I'm telling this machine, this is a brain, this is different from here. You know, the intellect and so on. But the machine is here. So you need to tell this machine, whatever you are bringing into my intellect, I've written it down and I'll think about it after half an hour, 40 minutes. Then this machine will leave you alone. You know, we have to find these ways because this machine is supposed to produce between 12 and 15 thoughts a minute. That's its job, right? So you can't stop it. Unless you focus on this one thought, which is for us, Baba. And so we try to do this. But sometimes, you know, your brain is very busy. I don't know if you find that. But sometimes you do find, all of us find that. Just write it down. That's what I do.
Good idea.
And
that's great.
Practical way. But for you, it's magic right now. Baba is taking so much care of you.
Enjoy.
Yeah. Do enjoy it, really. All of a sudden you'll see in a year or two, he disappears. You say, what happened? You know, then he leaves you alone and you have to fight for yourself. Isn't it? All of us have experienced that. Okay.
Thank you for being a wonderful group to
Thank
get
you.
To interview. Or the two of you, and a wonderful group out there of all of you. It was really, this was really special. This was very special. I had no idea that it would have this much, I mean, thanks to you, both of you, you know. So much to think about, reflect upon, but be easy about it, right? No worries, just keep going. Thank you for joining us.
Spent 2 minutes with Baba?
Yes.